Full Harvest, a collection of audio stories and poems inspired by the landscape of the South Downs National Park. Episode 3, Nature's Storehouse by Lucy Flannery.
The runner stretched, ignoring the twinges in his hip and knee. He glanced at the sky. Rain? Maybe. Maybe not. He set off through the car park and onto the trail, settling into a steady rhythm. Two other runners overtook him immediately. They looked serious, all their gear. Good luck to them. He was content now to go at a slower pace. He'd always liked this route. The last time he'd run the trail, before everything happened, he'd been with his occasional running partner, Rob. Rob had, of course, told him all the same stuff that he always did. Meon is an ancient British word, you know, like Celtic, and it means... He knew what it meant, Rob had told him last time. It means swift one, Rob chuckled. And I was thinking, you know... He'd known what was coming because Rob had made the same joke last time. I was thinking of getting T-shirts done for you and me. Mine could say Meon, and yours could say Sloan. He hadn't laughed the first time either. This used to be a train track, Rob began. I know. There's notice boards. In fact, he knew more about it now than Rob did, because he'd read about it. The line stretched from Alton to Fareham, an unthinkable route today. You could even change at Fareham to carry on to Gosport. Imagine. He swerved to avoid a loose dog and his knee twanged. The anxiety rose up in him, but he pushed it back down. He settled back into a steady pace, and gradually, calmness returned to him. He'd heard somewhere that Queen Victoria always used the Meon Valley Railway when she was on her way to Osborne House. Too posh to go through Pompey, presumably. He used to think of her when he ran this way. The sad little widow on her way to the Isle of Wight, missing her husband and fretting about her son. Just goes to show. Everyone has their own problems. But then he'd found out the line opened in 1903 and Queen Victoria died in 1901. So, unless it was a ghost train she was travelling on, that was all hooey. People used the pass to suit their own purposes, prove whatever point it was they were making. History dependent on who was telling it. Better to stick with what's real, like the downs and the trail and the river. His injury was real too. Not just the damage to his body, but the hurt to his mind. The theory he liked best about how the River Meon got its name was that it meant meandering. And that would seem about right. It certainly took its time getting to the sea, or getting anywhere come to that, looping and coiling around itself, like a sparkler in the hand of an excited child. It meant the Meon Valley Railway line needed, at one point, three bridges within a single half mile. It was no small undertaking. 22 miles long it was, Rob had said. 22 and a quarter, he thought now. It mainly shifted farming stuff, you know, livestock, and fruit and veg, especially strawberries. That figures? Yeah, and the other thing that was big back then was watercress. Rob had that gleam in his eye and he braced himself for what he knew was coming. Because watercress is, like, really good for you. Supposed to do all sorts of things like settle your stomach down. And the other thing they thought was that it cured baldness. So I was thinking, here it comes, he thought, maybe you should try some. Needs a constant supply of clean water. Watercress does, he'd said. That's why a chalk stream is ideal. They grow it on gravel pits and the water flows over it continuously. Perfect growing conditions. Just like your head would be for growing hair. Just need to rub some watercress on it. Coming towards him was a piebald pony and its rider. It looked calm enough, but he made a wide detour around it anyway, just in case. No sense in spooking it. The teenage rider smiled a thanks as he passed, and he raised his hand in salute. Horses made him think about the temple to the goddess Epona at Exton. Epona was a protector of horses, ponies, donkeys, and mules. In addition, she was the goddess of fertility, and also to have some kind of link with the underworld. So she certainly had her hands full. Epona was originally Celtic, but when the Romans got here, they adopted her too. That's what he meant by history being adaptable. They liked her, liked the idea of her, could see the usefulness of someone keeping an eye out for their horses and mules, so they went along with it. Even built her a temple, a hexagonal-shaped temple, which was quite rare in the UK, apparently. You'd think she'd have been into bees with a shape like that. There was no mention of it in the stuff he'd read online. And he'd read a lot. Not much of a one for books and internet articles usually, but that's what being out of action for so long would do for you. He hadn't read anything at first, of course. At first, he just stared at the telly, or at nothing. Whole afternoons went by and he couldn't tell you where they'd gone or what he thought about, or who the celebrity guest was on Countdown. Epona turned into a mother figure under the Romans, or maybe she already was, and that was all part of the facility job description. He didn't really know how gods and goddesses worked, but he could easily imagine lads posted here from all over the Roman Empire needing the thought of a mum to watch over them. Thousands of miles from home as they were, and freezing cold. Although the climate around here was mild compared to other parts of the UK, so it could have been worse. They could have found themselves at Hadrian's Wall. But still, he liked to think his mum was looking out for him. Those afternoons when his wife was at work, the kids at school and college, and him just sitting, gazing at the wall. Certainly, something had helped him turn the corner. That was a shock. He hadn't heard the bikes till they were right behind him and made him jump. He lost his rhythm for a few seconds and found himself gasping. Shouldn't be getting lung burn this early. He knew it was the first time out. Steady, he told himself. Think about something. Settle down. Think about the Mianwara, the tribe from Denmark or Germany or somewhere, who came here after the Romans scarpered. They settled the entire Mian Valley and were still here when the Normans came over in 1066 and started throwing their weight about. There was a school of thought that there was some connection with the River Main in Germany, and that's where the name came from. But he was sticking with his meandering theory. Some thought the Mianwara were warriors, some thought they were farmers. But all sources agreed they weren't best pleased when St. Wilfrid turned up in the 17th century and started converting them. He'd visited one of St. Wilfrid's churches when he was on the mend but not fit enough to start running. He'd got the bus there, picnic by the river. Not the kind of thing he'd ever have done if he'd still been working. It simply wouldn't have occurred to him, even if he'd had the time. He'd have been too worked up, too stressed, too focused on getting on, getting ahead, but there he was. It'd been a lovely day. He'd seen blue damselflies and a kingfisher. You don't forget a day like that. Did you say it's getting otter? Rob grinned. There's otters in the River Mian. You can see it on YouTube. A mum and two cubs. I know, he'd said. There weren't any for years and years, but then they worked hard improving the water quality and now they think there are at least three families. I know, he said again. But Rob had just carried on telling him stuff we already knew, some of which he'd sure he'd actually told Rob in the first place. But hang on a minute, what was wrong with him? Where was his head at? Here he was, finally doing his first proper run, and instead of enjoying it, he was remembering how annoying Rob was. What a waste. But it struck him. It was important that he also remembered what a good friend Rob could be. Had been. He'd come round to see him not once but three, maybe four times. He brought him chocolate and some sort of comedy DVD, said it would cheer him up. He never watched it, but it was a kind thought. He'd invite Rob to come along next time. But now it was time to go and see that special spot down by the river. He'd been looking forward to this for so long. All the time he was building back his strength and fitness, doing short runs around the estate, going to the gym, even doing some yoga workouts with his daughter. The instructor on screen talking so softly he had to strain to hear her, but half killing them with the things she made look easy. He came off the trail and turned onto the road, checking both ways for traffic. His feet made a different sound on the tarmac surface, more echoey. This was the boring bit, but thankfully it wasn't far, and even at his slow pace, just keep along the road till you see the turn off and follow the path. It was so lush and green and overgrown that you couldn't see it until the very last minute, until you turned the final bend, and there it was. The river. How many times had he stood in this spot, mesmerised? The water was high against the bank and crystal clear, running fast over the stones. A small branch floated past, taken by the swift current, and he watched it out of sight. He'd seen a heron here once, and another time he caught a glimpse of a deer through a gap in the bushes. But the water itself was always complete and perfect on its own. How he loved this chalk stream. Smaller than the mighty Test or Itchen, but no less lovely, fed by the same unique system of filters and springs. If you'd asked him a year ago about Isaac Walton, he'd have said it was the name of a pub in East Meon. Now he knew all about the famous fisherman. He could even quote him, "The waters are nature's storehouse, in which she locks up her wonders." There were certainly wonders in the Meon. Trout, eels, otters, water voles. But the really special thing was the way it made him feel. When he'd been trying to get better, what had helped was thinking about the river, especially this bit, remembering it, but also visualizing himself back here. And here he was. And when he went, he would put it in his heart and take it with him. And that was the real wonder of nature's storehouse. He stretched. His muscles would ache tonight, but in a good way, the right way. People use the past to suit their own purposes, prove whatever point it is they're making. He used to say that he was a runner, an executive, good at his job. He described himself as fit and strong, ambitious, competitive, aggressive even. At first, he'd been ashamed of his depression, trying to hide it. Now, if people asked, he told them the truth. He'd been overwhelmed with stress and barely coping. The injury was a result of not warming up properly, because he'd been in too much of a hurry. He was always in a hurry back then. Not anymore. He'd go at his own pace. And now, if anyone asked, he'd tell them. He was a husband, a father, a man who was grateful to his family for helping him heal. And a runner still, of course he was, and he always would be. For as long as his knee would let him, he would come to this valley and keep pace with the River Meon, both of them running together.
Nature's Storehouse was written by Lucy Flannery and read by John Knowles. It was commissioned and produced by Applause in partnership with the South Downs National Park Authority. We hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. There are 9 more podcasts for you to enjoy, so please subscribe to this series.